continuing the series on vocation formation, sponsored by the Institute on Religious Life. Father John Hardin speaks on the subject, the role of good example in religious formation.
To start, I thought I'd call your attention to this little green book, which I highly commend to all people in charge of formation, The Four Temperaments, the Reverend Conrad Hawk. Over the years, there are a few little books that I have found more useful. Translated from the German over 20 years ago, and is still very good. Very balanced, very clear, and very spiritual. Let me just read the first two short paragraphs. Socrates, one of the most renowned of the Greek sages, used and taught as an axiom to his hearers, know yourself. One of the most reliable means of learning to know oneself is the study of the temperaments. When man is fully cognizant of his temperament, he can learn easily to direct and control himself. If he is able to discern the temperament of others, he can better understand and help them. I commend this. I'm not sure what the cost is.
$2.
Well, it is worth it. It is worth it.
I just gave the address to Father because Brother Ray's not here right now. So.
In any case, I didn't know what the price was. 50 pages, that's 4 cents a page. At any rate, very useful.
And not only for directors, isn't it? Isn't it good for the novice and pastor to read to it?
Yes, it might be, although I think it would be well if it maybe there was a commentary for the postulants and novices. The danger with risk is that a person might too easily classify himself. I am, choleric. I need to control my temper. Or maybe the person is choleric. But he or she might also be phlegmatic. They may be lazy. In other words, human nature is so subtle. We may know one part of ourselves, but not know another part. Because no person, of course, fits any classic type perfectly. But these temperaments tend to predominate, and they also tend to be different with different people, so that the phlegmatic in one person is different from the phlegmatic in another. The role of good example in religious formation. First observation. It is through good example that religious communities first began in the church. In fact, come to think of it, that's the way Christianity began, with a good example of the Son of God in human form. I think we have come to cheapen, to perhaps overuse, words like good example and edification, and by now have perhaps lost sight of the profound, indispensable influence of good example. In fact, I would define leadership as sustained good example. Is not a periphery or a luxury of the spiritual life. It is of its very essence, beginning with the example of the Son of God who became man precisely that he might show us by living out the divine attributes as man. Moreover, with the origin of religious institutes from the very beginning. They all started with very saintly men and women, Antony, Pachomius, Basil, Benedict. Each one of them was sufficiently exemplary, as we say, to have others want to become like them. Moreover, we have in the Gospels Christ's own description telling us that we should not hide whatever good qualities we have, as the New Translation has it, under a bushel basket, but are to allow people to see our good works. But note the end of that sentence. And thus give glory to our Heavenly Father. This business, therefore, of giving, as we call it, good example, is a continuation of Christ's own role as the exemplary cause of both our salvation and sanctification. In fact, it is very good Catholic teaching, though never defined by the Church, that even though man had not sinned, God would have become man in order, by his example, to show us the way to heaven. You might say that Christ's own term, where he identified himself as the way, that's what that term means. I am the way. Learn of me. Follow me. And in fact, those frequent invitations of the Master, of his first disciples, one after the other, follow me. What he first and primarily meant was follow me in doing what I have done. Learn of me. Having said that, what is the logic, so to speak, of good example in religious formation? The logic is very simple. Where grace is active, there nature is changed. We instinctively expect grace to be effective. So much so that if we see a person, say, praying a lot, going to church a lot, and to all external intents and purposes, being, well, a pious, good Catholic, that is, in terms of ritual, worship, and prayer, and do not see the person's conduct correspond to, well, alleged piety, we either suspect there's something wrong, or at least we have a hard time reconciling what we see in terms of behavior with what we hear in terms of profession. The main problem in religious life, what a large statement. One of the main problems in religious life in a country like ours is that there are not enough religious. That there are not enough people who by their external behavior act on what they profess to be. It is spontaneous, and the young especially are eagle-eyed when it comes to recognizing the disproportion or the inconsistency between what we claim to be and what we are. They expect this grace, which we're supposed to be getting, to have some effect. And in fact, the more we extol the value of prayer, the need for grace, if they have the nerve, they will tell us, well, if grace is so effective, if prayer makes such wonderful changes in people's lives, why has it been lost on you? And there is no answer. No one ever hides genuine virtue. Can't be done. God owes it to himself to have the grace which he's cooperated with somehow to be manifest. He better. Otherwise, no one would even have the faith. There had to be faithful people who inspired other believers. There had to be holy people who inspired other holy people. God owes it to his own divine justice that where he gives grace and that grace is cooperated with, it will be seen. It will be recognized. Which is perhaps a good homemade definition of good example. Grace recognized. Where we see in people's conduct what, except for the grace that God gave them, they could never be or do. So much for the inner logic, so to speak, of good example. But now what I call the hierarchy of good example. I hope it will be clear what I intend to say by this, because I think in the practical order it is so valuable. Who, in other words, has a greater impact on other people, say in terms of their good behavior? I have six types of persons or situations. First, people with natural qualities, people who have extraordinary natural gifts, intelligent people, if their behavior is good, they are more influential than less intelligent. You think that makes sense? Because we figure, well, this person has thought it through. And we tend to be more drawn to morally well-behaved, intelligent people. In fact, as the cliche goes, well, you see simplicity, just beautiful, docile humility. But the person has an IQ hovering around 100. When you say, or you're tempted to say, well, maybe she doesn't know any better. So first, the natural endowments of a person make that person's behavior more influential. Second, those in authority. The more exalted their authority, the more their good example is correspondingly effective. Take our Holy Father, who surely believes in the power of good example, right? He makes sure that he is seen, and he probably looks around to see if there's a television camera in sight. Why not? Because the more exalted the authority, and the person's behavior is edifying, the more influential will be especially the impact of those who are under that authority. That's why if there's one thing which those who are superiors in a religious community must first look to is their own good behavior. Third, a person's age. Now this works both ways. Both those who are more mature in years, they have an impact, assuming they've had the experience, and also the young in years. At any rate, age is a factor in the influence of good example. Fourth, the office or responsibility which the person exercises. That's why those in public office have such a grave responsibility to their citizens. Because among the exercises in the apostolate, in whatever office we hold, the most important apostolic work we perform is by our behavior. The apostolate of good example. Fifth, a person's reputation. In other words, the good name that a person holds, or the person's fame. That's why a man, for example, like Andrew Greeley is doing so much damage to the Church of God. And now for weeks, almost every week, he is just bitter in his criticism of the Holy Father for condemning Hans Kuhn. And with the media today, as you know, reputation can be built up overnight. In any case, a person's reputation in a society. One reason we should make sure that our reputation is unsullied, because it makes our example, whatever we do, a person with a good reputation is watched as others are not. And finally, and this perhaps is the most important thing I wish to say regarding this hierarchy of good example. People tend to identify with their peers and thus good example in those with whom, those in whose favor we practice the good example. To the extent to which they can identify with us, the more influential that example is. A 20-year study of customs and traditions in the United States was released about a year ago, and this is in-depth analysis through thousands of examples. What is the single most important impact on the young people? That's a large statement. The single most important impact was the example of their peers. The peer pressure on the young. And the same study could have been made of adults or any age. In other words, the more people identify with a person, the more influential that person's example. Religious, therefore, have a greater impact on other religious. Priests on other religions, the young on the young. those in public office on those in public office. And consequently, that a good example in a community is, I consider, after the grace of God, the single most important formative instrument in the spiritual life. What has been called peer pressure. We've touched on this in another context. We just want to put it into context under the rubric of the role of good example. What virtues, we might ask ourselves, are especially edifying to behold? In other words, in terms of good example in religious formation, which is what we're talking about, that's where we are, isn't it? The role of good example in religious formation. What is or what are some of the virtues that are especially influential? First, deep and simple faith. With stress on faith. In other words, and the more gifted we are, the more naturally blessed with whatever virtues we may possess, the more influential, as we've been seeing all along. But first, a deep and simple faith. Secondly, prayerfulness. That is not an exaggerated term, prayerfulness, where it seems that a person is constantly united with God. Now, just for the record, a person closely united with God is not a person who is indifferent to others. Because if there is anything about God, He is not indifferent to others. So prayerfulness, being united with God, is beautiful to behold and has a powerful influence on others. And as we say, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Anyone who is really prayerful will show it, and you don't put this on. Thirdly, humility. In other words, the example of my humility, and especially if I am gifted, the more gifted I am, the more gifted I am, the more important it is for me to give the example of those virtues that I want others or expect others to imitate. Practical charity, selflessness. There is one thing you can never hide. Selfishness for selflessness. Prudence. Prudence is a virtue that is partly infused. It is mainly developed. And we develop prudence by acting on it. And part of prudence is foreseeing, anticipating, and finally, trust in providence. You can tell when a person really trusts in providence and when the person does not. There is, and all the supernatural virtues, when you analyze them in depth, are an apparent contradiction. What's another word for apparent contradiction? Paradox. The supernatural virtues are paradoxical. Prayer for people united with God may seem to be living in another world. Yes, but even as God provided, and man is the only creature whose head is erect, pointing to heaven, and whose feet are walking the ground. That we trust in God's providence, we do what we can, but always realize that God is running our lives. We trust Him, and then, expression that I like to use, walking hand in hand with God through the darkness of our lives. That's what I call trust in providence. You don't see, you trust. And you are sure that He will not mislead you. Well, that's the end of that. Any questions? And of course, we have had the practice of having you prepare something. Sister?
Father, I would ask if you're on faith, a deep and simple faith. Of course, all of your life is on the premise, but into this, the more we know, the deeper our faith can be. Now, with so many of these people are having difficulties in the church today, does that mean that those who are so intelligent and so forth, the more they know it, the farther they get from faith? Did they not have a real faith to begin with? Because some of the things you can read, and any child can see that they're wrong.
Well, I would say if they've been validly baptized, they have received the gift of faith. But faith, remember, though it is infused in baptism, and that means in infancy, must be cooperated with and developed. And I'm afraid that for many people, mainly because of their early, I would even say malformation, maybe early non-formation, that faith, and they may be physically mature and intellectually educated, but as far as the faith goes, they may still be infants.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.